Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Governor Newsom has signed into law a series of bills aimed at checking the power of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, in California. We have a warning for you today about some misleading Medicare ads. Congressman Daryl Issa cast the deciding vote on blocking the Epstein files release. On Crime Beat, hear about a bizarre hit-and-run spree in El Cajon and Santee. The sheriff seeks public help to find a missing woman who's not been seen since July, but her vehicle was found in Potrero. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, and we'll have some helpful information for you on our show today. President Donald Trump has doubled down on his attacks on the media, threatening the First Amendment freedom of the press, and we'll have a special report on our show today. We'll also tell you what lessons can be learned from the Cochise fire in Lakeside earlier this month, with some safety tips for mobile homes to help keep them safe from wildfires. On Destination East County, hear about some awesome October events coming up across our inland region, from Oktoberfests to Borrego Days to some haunting Halloween activities. And finally, hear about a bill currently awaiting the governor's signature that would help protect Native children and keep them out of foster care. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a set of bills meant to check the Trump administration's aggressive immigration crackdown in California, CalMatters reports. This includes a first-in-the-nation measure to prohibit officers from wearing masks and others that limit their access to schools and hospitals. The new laws echo the resistance measures California adopted during the first administration, when it passed a so-called sanctuary law to limit local law enforcement from cooperating with immigration agents, among other policies. During the bill signing in Los Angeles, Newsom said, "Immigrants have rights, and we have the right to stand up and push back." President Trump promised a historic deportation effort and assault on sanctuary-style policies when he took office for the second time. His administration criticized the state's new immigration laws even before Newsom signed them. The Department of Homeland Security had called on Newsom to veto the mask bill. Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin, in a September 16th press release, stated, "Once again, sanctuary politicians are trying to outlaw officers wearing masks to protect themselves from being doxxed and targeted by known and suspected terrorist sympathizers." California may struggle to enforce these new laws, some of which have already raised constitutional questions around the state's role in federal operations, but lawmakers maintain that they are legally defensible. California political consultant Mike Madrid said in signing the laws, "Newsom is showing that he can stand up and fight whether or not he has a chance of winning." Madrid, a longtime Republican consultant who co-founded the Anti-Trump Lincoln Project, notes, "In this moment when there are very few cards to play for state governments and state legislatures, California has done what no other state has done, establish itself as the tip of the spear on resisting a lot of these efforts that are an affront to its values." He called the action both politically astute but also morally right. Now, the package of bills that Newsom signed includes Assembly Bill 49, which prohibits schools from allowing immigration enforcement officers on campus without a warrant, Senate Bill 627, which widely prohibits federal and local law enforcement officers from wearing face masks while conducting their duties, Senate Bill 805 requires that law enforcement officers identify themselves while conducting their duties, with a few exceptions, Senate Bill 81 prohibits immigration enforcement from entering restricted areas of a health facility without a judicial warrant or court order. And finally, Senate Bill 98 requires schools and higher education institutions to send community notifications whenever immigration enforcement is on campus, and it prohibits immigration enforcement from entering certain areas without a judicial warrant or a court order. California Democrats began drafting immigration-related bills almost as soon as Trump took office in January. Those efforts accelerated after the Trump administration launched aggressive immigration sweeps across L.A., which led to weeks of protests and a National Guard deployment. Kevin Johnson, an immigration law professor and former dean of the UC Davis School of Law, says the legislation may have a marginal impact on federal immigration enforcement operations. In 2018, California passed a law to restrict immigration arrests at Superior Court buildings, but that didn't stop the Trump administration from detaining people at these courts this year. Xiuming Chir, deputy director at California Immigrant Policy Center, remains hopeful that the package of bills will ensure safety for people attending school and accessing health care if there is vigorous monitoring by both the states and advocates. The most controversial bill in the package was Democratic Senator Scott Wiener's proposal to widely ban federal and local law enforcement officers from wearing face masks while conducting their duties. The law, also known as the No Secret Police Act, does not apply to certain forms of face covering, such as face shields, and it exempts some officers, including those who are undercover. Officers who violate the law could face an infraction or misdemeanor charge. Senator Wiener said in an August hearing, ICE's recklessness creates chaos as agents run around with what are effectively ski masks and no identification, grabbing people, throwing them in unmarked vehicles, and disappearing them. When law enforcement officers hide their identities, it destroys community trust. California's law enforcement groups widely opposed the bill, arguing it will largely apply to local police rather than federal agents because the federal government is likely to sue on constitutional grounds. Brian Marvel, president of the Peace Officers Research Association of California, testified, "You're upset with the feds, but you're going to punish us." Other law enforcement experts echoed those concerns, arguing that it's illegal to interfere with federal operations. Ed Obayashi, a longtime California police officer who now is a special prosecutor and police advisor to the Modoc County Sheriff's Office, predicts California cops are not going to enforce this law. The law allows officers, however, to be sued personally for tortious conduct, including if they assault or falsely arrest someone while masked, so private enforcement could be the most likely means of stopping arrests by masked ICE agents and holding them accountable. The bill caused hours of contentious debate on the Senate and Assembly floors, with many Republicans calling it misguided. But Democrats were animated because just days before, the U.S. Supreme Court sided with the Trump administration and ICE for conducting roving sweeps through Los Angeles, apparently catching bystander day laborers or anyone who appeared Latino in their dragnet. The bill, they said, was their way of pushing back. Hector Pereira, policy manager for the nonprofit Inland Coalition for Immigrant Justice, which co-sponsored the mask bill and another bill to protect private data of street vendors, concludes, "We need a full front defense for the violence that is coming from this regime. We have to respond with a united front of strength and aggressiveness, not passiveness." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
By a one-vote margin, House Republicans have blocked release of files related to convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein and his client list. Among San Diego County representatives, Republican Daryl Issus spoke in support of Trump and cast a deciding vote to block release of the Epstein files, while the region's four Democratic members all voted for release of the files. The congressional action comes despite release by the Epstein estate earlier this month of a lewd drawing of a nude young girl's torso that was sketched by Donald Trump as a birthday gift for Epstein, according to the Epstein estate, which released the sketch created decades ago. Trump has denied making the drawing, which bears what appears to be his signature. Trump and Epstein were publicly known to be friends and socialized together throughout the 1990s and early 2000s, with Trump telling New York Magazine in 2002 that Epstein was, quote, a terrific guy. According to Trump, the two had a falling out in the mid-2000s. He later said that he was, quote, not a fan, unquote, and that he had banned Epstein from his Mar-a-Lago resort. 2 months ago, Attorney General Pam Bondi informed President Trump in May that his name appeared multiple times with the Department of Justice's files on Epstein, according to major news outlets, though she later claimed there was no client list. Additionally, Trump's name appeared in Epstein's flight logs at least 8 times between 1993 and 1997 for flights on Epstein's private jet, which also included Trump family members. Virginia Giuffre, one of Epstein's most prominent accusers, testified that she was recruited from Trump's Mar-a-Lago club. Trump denied knowledge of Epstein's crimes and yet said in July that Epstein, quote, stole, unquote, Giuffre from his club's spa, where she worked as a locker room attendant at age 16. Giuffre's family will have a memoir of her experiences published posthumously in October. In his campaign, Trump promised to release the Epstein files, but despite calls to do so from his MAGA base, Trump directed his Justice Department and members of his party to drop the Epstein list matter and has threatened to label those demanding transparency as making a, quote, hostile threat, unquote. All 47 Democrats, as well as independents Angus King and Bernie Sanders, voted for the release of the Epstein content. All Senate Republicans, except for Josh Hawley and Rand Paul, voted to table the amendment and prevent its consideration. In early September, the House Oversight Committee released some records from the Epstein estate. The documents include a controversial, quote, birthday book, unquote, containing messages with sexual innuendos, allegedly from well-known political figures such as Donald Trump, Prince Andrew, and Bill Clinton for Epstein's 50th birthday back in 2003. The release of documents has intensified political division, with Democrats and some Republicans pushing for full disclosure of files, while Republicans on the House Oversight Committee have accused Democrats of, quote, politicizing, unquote, the information to target Trump. The House Oversight Committee has released tens of thousands of pages of Justice Department documents related to the Epstein case. However, Democrats on the committee noted that 97% of the material was already public. Back in August, a federal judge denied a Justice Department request to unseal a grand jury record in Ghislaine Maxwell's sex trafficking case. Maxwell, who is serving a 20-year sentence and appealing her conviction, opposed the unsealing. Inside the Justice Department, FBI Deputy Director Dan Bongino, who previously circulated conspiracy theories about a government cover-up related to Epstein, has reportedly had a falling out with Bondi over the issue and threatened to quit, CNN reports. Epstein's death in federal prison, officially ruled a suicide by federal authorities, has fueled conspiracy theories. A camera was inexplicably shut off at the time of his death during Trump's first presidency. In an interview with Epstein in 2017, Trump biographer Michael Wolff spoke of the close social connection between Trump and Epstein, including a recording of Trump stating that Epstein was Trump's, quote, closest friend, unquote. In a New York Magazine article, Trump once said of Epstein, quote, he's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side, unquote. The White House has not denied Senator Dick Durbin's revelation that FBI agents were told to flag every Epstein file mentioning President Trump, suggesting a cover-up. According to a whistleblower disclosure received by Durbin's office in the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Trump administration allegedly pressured the FBI to review Epstein's files, prompting about 1,000 FBI employees to work around the clock, reviewing over 100,000 documents to flag all references to Trump. Durbin criticized officials in the Trump administration, including Attorney General Pam Bondi, for making conflicting statements about the Epstein content. In July, Bondi publicly claimed that the Epstein client list was, quote, sitting on my desk right now to review, unquote. And yet the Department of Justice, DOJ, later issued a memo stating that there was no incriminating, quote, client list, unquote. After a review of the files, The Justice Department released a memo in July stating that it found, quote, no evidence, unquote, of a so-called client list, or that Epstein blackmailed prominent figures. That memo contradicted previous statements by Attorney General Pam Bondi about the existence of a client list, kindling backlash and renewed calls for greater transparency from congressional members. The Trump administration's handling of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's case is opening divides among Republican lawmakers, officials, and right-wing media figures as the president confronts backlash from MAGA supporters. Amid controversy, Trump allies from Speaker Mike Johnson to right-wing activist Laura Loomer have broken with the administration over its handling of the Epstein issue. Far-right Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia told CNN that the Trump administration's mishandling of files related to Epstein's case, quote, is a red line, quote, that's been crossed. She had announced willingness to read names of Epstein's victims aloud if the list is released. Representative Daryl Issa, whose district includes much of East County, testified that much of what his base believes about the case is not true. Defending Trump on the House floor, Issa said of Trump administration officials, quote, I trust the people who reported it to us and who looked at them, unquote. Meanwhile, despite Epstein's convictions for the rape and exploitation of minors, President Trump, who has a history of being accused of sexual assaults himself through the years, has ramped up his efforts to pressure legislators not to release the Epstein files. A group of women who say they were victims of Epstein when they were young teens held a press conference in Washington, D.C. this month to speak out and called for justice. Attorney Gloria Allred, who represents 27 Epstein survivors, says, quote, there has still been no outreach from the DOJ or members of Congress to me seeking to interview my clients, unquote. Lisa Bloom, who has represented 11 Epstein survivors, states, quote, as usual, the survivors are being ignored in the political battle, unquote. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Experts on Medicare are warning of an onslaught of deceptive ads targeting older adults as many prepare for Medicare open enrollment in a few weeks. Californians are getting lots of calls and postcards for Medicare Advantage plans. Many promise incentives like gift cards or offer benefits like vision or dental, which aren't normally covered by Medicare. Tatiana Fessieu with the California Health Advocates Senior Medicare Patrol says you've got to do your research.
Thoroughly verify whether all of your medical providers are in the network and what will the out-of-pocket maximums be, because having a zero premium plan has a cost to it.
People can get help with the decision via their County Area on Aging's representative for the Health Insurance Counseling and Advocacy Program. You can find a list of HICAP counselors at cahealthadvocates.org. Fessieu says she's seen people accidentally enroll in plans that don't even operate in their zip code.
What sounds potentially too good to be true, it may be a real disaster if they cannot access their doctors, or if all of a sudden they find that their out-of-pocket costs are exponentially higher than what they were used to before.
The deceptive ads often target people who are eligible for both Medi-Cal and Medicare, but the rules on that are complicated, so it's best to consult a HICAP counselor. A federal judge in Texas recently blocked a Biden-era rule that would have cracked down on misleading practices by Medicare insurance brokers. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. A driver suspected of being intoxicated has been arrested for a series of hit-and-run collisions in Santee and El Cajon. Sheriff's deputies responded the evening of September 9th to a hit-and-run crash near Prospect and North Magnolia in Santee and learned that El Cajon police had issued a be-on-the-lookout alert for a similar green SUV that struck several vehicles in El Cajon. Shortly after 6:30 p.m., a wrong-way driver in a green SUV was reported heading south on Timberlane Lane in Santee. The driver then collided with two more vehicles at Mast Boulevard and Biltier Drive, causing injuries to the driver and one of the other vehicles. The suspect vehicle then veered off the roadway and hit an SDG&E power box. Lieutenant Thomas Fletcher with the Sheriff's Department says the 34-year-old suspect, whose name has not been released, appeared to be intoxicated. He was taken into custody and transported to a hospital for treatment. Anyone with additional information regarding these collisions is encouraged to contact the Santee Sheriff's Station at 619-656-4000.
The San Diego County Sheriff's Office is asking for the public's help in finding a missing woman. 38-year-old Gonica Resnick was reported missing to the sheriff's office by a friend on July 12th. Family members say they last heard from her on July 5th while she drove through San Diego County as part of a cross-country trip. Her vehicle and trailer were later found unattended in Potrero, a rural East County community. Kovrisnik's current whereabouts are unknown. Sheriff's detectives say it is possible she may have crossed the U.S.-Mexico border into the Tecate area of Mexico, just south of Potrero. She stands 5 feet 5 inches tall and weighs 100 pounds, with blonde hair and blue eyes. She may be wearing a wig. She has several tattoos on her arms. She may be using the name Angel Voldaya, according to Sergeant Jacob Klepek. If you have seen Gada Kovrisnik, also known as Angel Volnaya, or have any information about where she may be, please call the San Diego County Sheriff's Office at 858-868-3200. You could also call San Diego County Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
September is National Suicide Prevention Month. During this month, organizations and individuals work to promote awareness of suicide as a public health issue, share resources and information to help people who may be struggling, encourage open conversations about suicide and mental health, remember those who have been lost to suicide, and highlight the importance of the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Additionally, World Suicide Prevention Day was observed on September 10th. San Diego County Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp shared several suicide prevention resources with her constituents, including texting 988 for 24-hour, 7-days-a-week support in more than 200 languages. She also notes that the San Diego County Access and Crisis Line is available at 888-724-7240 for mental health treatment referrals, suicide prevention help, substance abuse support, and community resources. You can also visit the It's Up to Us website at uptosd.org for mental health needs, suicide prevention, and alcohol and substance use treatment. Stepp has been a staunch advocate for increased mental health care, including fighting to protect and expand funding for inpatient care and emergency resources, outpatient counseling, and long-term care and housing. Suicide is a major public health issue. In 2023, it was the 11th leading cause of death in the United States. More than 49,000 Americans died by suicide in 2023. Nearly one death every 11 minutes, For every death by suicide, there are many more people who make an attempt. In 2023, there were an estimated 1.5 million attempted suicides in the U.S. Suicide affects all populations, but some groups are disproportionately impacted. The suicide rate for males is significantly higher than for females. In 2023, the age-adjusted suicide rate for males was nearly four times higher than the rate for females. Males account for nearly 80% of all suicide deaths. But while males die by suicide more often, females are more likely to attempt suicide. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for people between ages 10 and 34, and the fourth leading cause of death for individuals aged 35 and 44. Yet the highest suicide rate in 2023 were among seniors aged 85 and older. Non-Hispanic American Indian and Alaska Native people and non-Hispanic white people had the highest suicide rates in 2024, over double the national average. In 2023, firearms were the most common method of death by suicide, accounting for more than 55% of all suicide deaths. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
Since taking office in January, President Donald Trump has been waging an aggressive campaign against the media, unlike any in modern U.S. history. Those efforts include lawsuits against major media outlets, threats to yank broadcast licenses of networks that cover him unfavorably, calling for removal of late-night comedians who criticize MAGA, and ending funding of public broadcasting, including PBS and NPR. Trump recently threatened to have the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, cancel broadcast licenses of TV stations that he perceives as against him. FCC Chair Brendan Carr has made similar threats, including during a CNBC interview. Legal scholars say the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment, which protects free speech and a free press, should prevent the FCC from revoking licenses over political disagreements. But the current Supreme Court has recently issued rulings overturning other rights long deemed constitutionally protected. On September 17th, Trump celebrated ABC's suspension of Jimmy Kimmel's late-night show after the comedian made remarks about the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk that criticized the president's MAGA movement. ABC said on September 17th that it will indefinitely stop airing Jimmy Kimmel Live after the late-night host's comments about Kirk's assassination came under harsh criticism from the head of the FCC. Hours before the suspension, Carr, the chairman of the FCC, publicly suggested that Kimmel had contributed to a, quote, concerted effort to try to lie to the American people, unquote. Carr underscored the FCC's control over the broadcast licenses issued to local stations using public airwaves and said that regulated entities like ABC could, quote, do this the easy way or the hard way. During his monologue, Kimmel said, "We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it." Now, the accused assassin did grow up in a conservative religious family that posted gun-toting photos of themselves, leading to early reports that he was conservative. His grandmother called the entire family MAGA. However, later reports revealed that he had grown to criticize Kirk for what he called hateful remarks, particularly against the LGBTQ community. The young alleged killer, Tyler Robinson, reportedly had a transgender roommate and had evolved his views on some issues. It is unclear just when Kimmel's monologue on these issues was written. The FBI reportedly has so far found no ties between Robinson and any left-wing groups, NBC reports, as of our press taping deadline. Trump took to Truth Social to make fun of Kimmel's ratings while also throwing some shots at Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers, and Jimmy Fallon, other late-night comics. Trump said on Truth Social, "Great news for America, the ratings challenge Jimmy Kimmel's show is canceled. Congratulations to ABC for finally having the courage to do what had to be done." He went on to say that Kimmel has zero talent and worse ratings than Colbert, adding, "That leaves Jimmy and Seth two total losers on fake news NBC. Their ratings are also horrible. Do it, NBC," Trump urged, apparently calling on the networks to fire the other two comics next. America's late-night TV host, however, rallied behind fellow comedian Kimmel after his show was suspended by ABC, which is owned by Disney. And the public has sparked a backlash against Disney, canceling subscriptions to the Disney Network and visits to Disney's theme parks. Colbert began a recent episode by saying, "We are all Jimmy Kimmel," and adding that the star's removal was a blatant assault on freedom of speech. Myers declared it was a privilege and honor to call Jimmy Kimmel my friend. According to the BBC, Fallon and Jon Stewart tackled the free speech issue by doing satirical sketches in which they were apparently forced to praise Donald Trump. Kimmel became the second late-night comedian with a history of criticizing Trump to lose a show this year. CBS canceled Stephen Colbert's show after he criticized the network's settlement of a lawsuit filed by Trump over its editing of a 60 Minutes interview with former Vice President Kamala Harris. CBS claimed the decision was made for financial reasons. However, the suspension of Kimmel's show has highlighted the president's broader efforts to pressure journalists, media companies, comedians, commentators, and others to align with his views, something that fits with an authoritarian regime. Trump filed a lawsuit against the New York Times alleging defamation and accusing the outlet of being a virtual mouthpiece for the Democratic Party. Trump's $15 billion lawsuit is the latest example of what First Amendment experts have described as a presidential strategy to silence critical news coverage and curb free speech by filing nuisance lawsuits. The New York Times immediately signaled it would fight the suit, but the Committee to Protect Journalists observed that these types of defamation suits send a chilling message and can entangle news media in time-consuming and costly legal processes. However, on September 19th, U.S. District Judge Stephen Merriday threw out Trump's lawsuit, calling it an undignified public relations exercise meant to rage against an adversary rather than present a well-reasoned legal case against the New York Times. Politico reports, while Trump has the option to refile the suit, his legal team will likely have a hard time proving the charges leveled in the lawsuit. In order for public figures like Trump to win a libel suit, he must show actual malice, meaning the defendants either knew the statements were false or acted with reckless disregard for their truth. The Times said the lawsuit lacks any legitimate legal claim and instead is an attempt to stifle and discourage independent reporting. The newspaper's statement continues, "The New York Times will not be deterred by intimidation tactics. We will continue to pursue the facts without fear or favor." Publisher A.G. Sulzberger spent the last year drawing attention to what he calls the anti-press playbook being deployed by aspiring strongmen around the world. He said in a speech that part of the playbook is to exploit the civil courts to impose financial pressure and punish independent journalists. The president's filing against the New York Times cited previous examples of lawsuits brought by Trump's lawyers against Disney's ABC News and Paramount Global's CBS News, which resulted in multi-million dollar settlements by both companies, much to the chagrin of other media outlets. Journalism advocacy groups warn that by settling rather than defending themselves against Trump in court, ABC and CBS are emboldening him to keep up his legal campaign. Trump is also suing the Wall Street Journal and the reporters who wrote a story about a collection of letters gifted to Jeffrey Epstein. That lawsuit charged that the Wall Street Journal falsely claimed that Trump's author drew and signed a card to wish the late and utterly disgraced Epstein a happy 50th birthday, according to CNN. Trump continues to claim it's a hoax, although drawing bears what appears to be his signature and was released by the Epstein estate. In yet another attack on the media in July, the House approved the Trump administration's decision to rescind $9 billion in previously allocated funds, including $1.1 billion for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which cut all federal support for NPR, PBS, and their member stations. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which funds NPR and PBS, announced August 1st that it was shutting down, forcing local stations such as KPBS here in San Diego to rely entirely on other funding sources. Trump's team previously filed a libel lawsuit against the New York Times in relation to an opinion piece concerning Russian interference during the 2016 U.S. election. That was dismissed on the grounds of protected speech. Trump has also sued the newspaper and his estranged niece, Mary Trump, over a 2018 story about his family's wealth and tax arrangements, describing it as an insidious plot to obtain his records. A New York Times judge also threw out that case in 2023. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Swift action by firefighters, including aerial attacks, held the Cochise Fire in Lakeside to 5.3 acres. But the damage from the September 9th brush fire was substantial. Five homes were destroyed, including three mobile homes at the Monterey Mobile Lodge, according to Lakeside's fire marshal, Jeremy Davis. Three other homes in the mobile home park were damaged. CAL FIRE Captain Mike Cornett says that 10 to 15 vehicles were burned. There were also two reported civilian injuries, a burn victim and another with smoke inhalation. The first engine arrived within a couple of minutes after the fire was reported on the Highway 80 business loop east of Los Cochise Road. Other crews soon arrived, with 15 more engines later rolling in. Local helicopters dropped water and fixed-wing aircraft also responded to the fire, though dropping fire retardant was impeded by firefighters on the ground and people evacuating in the crowded space. 17,300 residents were under evacuation orders, according to Supervisor Joel Anderson. The fire accelerated quickly, in part due to propane tanks exploding and vehicle fuel tanks bursting into flames. The losses highlight the need to improve safety of mobile homes from wildfires, since even the swiftest possible firefighting response to the Cochise Fire could not prevent loss of homes and very nearly human life. Resident Sharon Edwards has been lauded as an angel for rescuing her neighbor, 90-year-old Evelyn Buell, who is blind and cannot walk. Buell told Times of San Diego, "I didn't smell anything until my neighbor came banging on my house and got me out of there." Edwards' own mobile home was gutted by the fire, while Buell's home was damaged. For Buell, the fire brought back disturbing memories, since she lost the home she shared with her daughter and son-in-law during the 2003 Cedar Fire. Renee Evans lived next door to a mobile home that burned down. She says her neighbor's cats perished, and he also lost his vehicle, making his loss even more devastating. Evans had some damage to her home and was displaced overnight. She says, "We had a lot of air support and fire engines here," but adds that the wind was blowing embers onto roofs ahead of the fire. Evans has exterior as well as interior sprinklers and has taken care to eliminate weeds on her property, steps that may have helped save her home. Mobile homes can burn quickly and are often located close to other mobile homes, enabling fire to spread quickly. Several years ago, the March fire in Alpine devastated a mobile home park, burning dozens of structures. These fires highlight the danger that wildfires pose to mobile home park residents. But there are steps you can take to harden your home and make it more wildfire resistant. San Diego offers grants and loans for mobile home owners and manufactured homeowners to make home health and safety repairs, including fire safety upgrades, Supervisor Anderson advises. To qualify, mobile home owners must live in unincorporated areas of San Diego County or in certain cities, including Lemon Grove and Poway in the inland region. The homeowner must have lived there for at least 1 year before the application is approved and have a household income at or below 80% of San Diego County's area median income. For example, for a household with just one person, you can earn up to $92,700. For two people, the limit is $105,950, and the limit rises with more people in the family. The home repair grant provides up to $20,000 that does not have to be paid back. The home repair loan program allows owners to borrow up to $25,000 at 3% annual interest. No monthly payment is required, but the loan must be repaid after 30 years or sooner if the home sells, is transferred, or the owner moves out. For more information to add your name to the program waitlist, you can call 858-694-4847. There are many steps you can take to reduce the wildfire risk to a mobile home or manufactured home. Key steps include: create defensible space around your home with nothing combustible within 5 feet around the mobile home. If there's room between your mobile home and others, clear 30 feet around your residence of dead grasses, weeds, and other combustible foliage. Create space between plants and trim limbs to avoid ladder fuel for fires. Don't use any bark mulch or gorilla hair mulch, which are highly flammable. Keep the roof clear of leaves or debris. Harden your home to protect from wind-blown embers, the most common cause of wildfires igniting homes. Don't have any combustible materials under decks or beneath the mobile home. Decks should have corrosion-resistant metal screening with 1/8 inch mesh from the edge of the deck to the ground. Don't have a fence that can burn, such as wood or vinyl, within 5 feet of your residence. Choose a metal fence, such as chain link. Replace flammable siding, such as vinyl, that melts with safer alternatives. Many fiber cement siding products carry a Class A flame spread index, the safest level possible, and can slow the spread of a fire. Steel siding is also a good choice. Avoid aluminum siding, which can melt at less than half the temperature needed to melt steel. Brick and stone veneers over wooden frames can reduce the risk of fire damage substantially, but avoid thin veneers. If you can afford it, install fiber cement trim around windows and doors and be sure all openings are well sealed. If many costly upgrades are needed, consider replacing the old fire-prone home with a new fire-resistant manufactured home. If you live in a high fire hazard severity zone, all new manufactured homes must conform to Title 24, Part 2, Chapter 7A to qualify for building permits. Exterior sprinklers may help, but are less important than making the mobile home itself fire-hardened, such as with non-flammable siding and decking. Check with your fire department first to see if there's adequate water supply for an extended period. Some exterior sprinklers can be activated manually or by an automated device using a sensor or cell phone, but sensors may not pick up wind-driven embers since they rely on detection of heat and flames. Water spray landing on a hot window may cause glass to break and allow fire to enter. Water may not protect undersides of mobile homes. As for interior sprinklers, while these can douse a fire that starts inside your home, interior sprinklers will not stop a wildfire that burns a mobile home from the outside inward. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is John Tidwell with Destination East County. October brings Oktoberfest celebrations in La Mesa and El Cajon, as well as an array of spooky events such as a haunted circus, haunted trails in county parks, a Day of the Dead celebration, Hauntfest on Main and El Cajon, a haunted harvest in Julian, pumpkin patches, costume contests for people and dogs, a boo bash at Viejas, a haunted train ride in Campo, a pumpkin bash and spooky sleepover at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, and an autumn festival at the San Diego Zoo's Safari Park. La Mesa invites you to enjoy its Oktoberfest October 3rd through October 5th, featuring traditional Germana cuisine and beers, plus two stages of live music featuring everything from traditional Bavarian and German music to rock bands and DJs. There are also kids games, Dachshund races, contests, rides, and more. See full details at lamesaoktoberfest.org. The last weekend in September and first weekend in October, the German-American societies invite you to don your lederhosen and enjoy two full weekends of authentic German celebrations at the El Cajon Oktoberfest. Guests can feast with gusto on foods such as bratwurst, sauerkraut, and ox on a spit, quench your thirst with German beers, kick up your heels with traditional folk dancing and games such as steinholding competitions. There's also interactive musical entertainment, a band flown in from Germany, a kids zone, and more. Find full details at events.germanclubsandiego.org. The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association hosts its annual Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration each weekend in October. You can ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County backcountry as fall descends upon Campo along the historic San Diego and Arizona Railway route. After the ride, guests can decorate pumpkins from an outdoor patch and view displays of haunted train cars and Halloween scenes. Passengers are encouraged to come in costume for the family-friendly event, which has several departures each weekend. There's also an adults-only Sip and Scare Sunset Special on Saturday nights in October. For tickets and details, visit Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org/pumpkin/. Borrego Springs hosts its annual Borrego Days Desert Festival on October 18th and 19th. Saturday features a morning flyover and a parade, as well as the Shine and Show Vehicle Show. There's also a beer garden, kids zone, food stations, and booths featuring everything from art to information. Plus, you can enjoy live music all weekend long. For a full schedule of events and details, visit borregodays.com/. The Magnolia in El Cajon hosts its third annual Haunted Circus on October 17th at 5:30 p.m. This year's theme is Monsters at Play. Family-friendly shows feature jugglers, contortionists, stilt walkers, hoop throwers, stacking chairs, crystal balls, acrobats, and more, with performances by Twisted Orbit Circus Entertainment. For tickets and details, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. The City of El Cajon invites you to Hauntfest on Main, set for October 17th from 4 to 9 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. This family-friendly event, open to the community, features live music, costume contests, carnival rides, a haunted car show, and a variety of local vendors offering food, crafts, games, and more. For the haunting details, visit elcajon.gov and click on the calendar. Oma's Pumpkin Patch in Lakeside is open Tuesdays through Sundays in October. In addition to picking pumpkins, visitors can enjoy a haze maze, a petting zoo for all ages, a hayride, duck races, and more. Children delight in interactive games and activities, while adults can sample delicious pumpkin-themed treats and fall-flavored products. Learn more and book your reservations online at omasfamilyfarm.com. Famed for its pumpkin patch, including giant pumpkins, Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center also hosts several October events, including a pumpkin festival, craft fair, October 4th, costume contest and parade, October 25th, and Halloween doggy costume contest and parade, October 26th. Find a full list of Bates Nut Farm events at batesnutfarm.biz. Lions, Tigers, and Bears Sanctuary in Alpine is hosting a spooky campover on October 24th under the stars. The fun includes campfire songs, pumpkin carving, a Halloween costume contest, and an all-ages haunted house. Enjoy the animal trivia challenge, make s'mores by the campfire, and sip hot cocoa at their Big Cat and Wildlife Sanctuary in San Diego. Come dressed in your best costume and watch rescued big cats and bears devour their pumpkin treats during the Pumpkin Bash at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine on October 25th at 10 a.m. Pumpkins are stuffed with delicious goodies for fall-themed enrichment as the animals play with their pumpkins and gobble down the goodies. For tickets at these events, visit www.lionstigersandbears.org. The San Diego Zoo Safari Park in San Pasqual hosts its Autumn Festival each Saturday and Sunday in October. Enjoy viewing wildlife, watching special entertainment, and tasting culinary comforts for plenty of family fun. In honor of Founders Day, there's no admission fee during the entire month of October for children age 11 and under when accompanied by an adult at both the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park, a perfect time for kids to go wild. Learn more at sdzsafaripark.org. San Diego Parks and Recreation offers a variety of spooky happenings in October. These include Dia de los Muertos at Rancho Guajome, Adobe and Haunted Trail Hikes at Oak Oasis in Lakeside, both on October 11th, Haunted Trail at Dos Picos County Park, and a Halloween festival at the Lakeside Community Center, both on October 17th. There are also spooky trails at Hellhole Canyon Preserve on October 18th and a spooktacular Spring Valley Community Center on October 24th. For a full list of activities in county parks, see sdparks.org. The park at Viejas in Alpine hosts a Boo Bash Halloween party on October 31st, featuring music, dancing, and devilishly good fun. Enjoy music from two DJs plus Earth to Mars, a Bruno Mars tribute band, a costume contest with $7,500 in prizes, themed photo booth, Halloween cocktails, caricature artists, and Halloween treats. For full details, visit viejas.com and click on Events. Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures near Julian hosts Haunted Harvest Nights each Saturday in October, featuring spooky fun, if you dare. Activities include a haunted hayride and a walk through a ghostly forest, ghost stories, and more. For tickets and details, visit fortcross.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat Report. After passing both the Assembly and State Senate unanimously, a bill aimed at preventing placement of Native American children in foster care away from their tribes and to provide supportive services is now awaiting action by Governor Gavin Newsom. Assembly Bill 1378 would amend state law to let tribes and tribal organizations partner with the California Department of Social Services to provide services aimed at helping keep Native American children safely at home and out of foster care. According to the bill's author, Assemblyman Chris Rogers from Santa Rosa, a Democrat, Native American children in California are placed into foster care at about four times the rate of other children. Rogers says, when we invest in culturally appropriate services, we strengthen families and avoid the trauma of separation. AB 1378 will ensure tribes can directly access the same prevention program funding that is available to counties and other service providers. This is a critical step toward equity and better outcomes for tribal youth, the bill's author concludes. The reasons for the disproportionately high number of Native children in foster care include systemic bias, poverty, substance abuse, and red tape that makes it challenging for tribes to access preventative services. AB 1378 aims to remedy that situation by providing tribes with improved access to mental health care, parenting education, and treatment for substance abuse. If signed into law by Governor Newsom, the bill would also train social workers, provide technical help to tribes for data collection and reporting, help tribes build preventative programs, and provide funding for legal representation of families and children. Governor Newsom has until October 13th to sign AB 1378 into law, Associated Press reports. According to CalMatters, by March 31st of next year, the state must develop a cost allocation plan to fund independent legal representation after consultation with tribes. The bill has broad support from Native American tribes across California. No opposition was registered, according to an Assembly Committee analysis.
This is Shalay Sasan with a special report on wildfire preparedness from KNSJ's East County Magazine radio show. The firestorms of 2003 and 2007 taught us that homes with defensible space are far more likely to survive than homes without it. Defensible space is an area around the home where plants and trees are maintained to prevent fire from spreading quickly. A buffer zone gives firefighters a better chance to make a stand and save your home during a wildfire. Fire officials recommend clearing away dry brush to form a 100-foot buffer zone around your home. The buffer could include hardscaping such as tile, stone, or concrete patios and walkways, or fire-resistant landscaping such as succulents. Trim tree branches 6 feet above the ground so that low-hanging branches won't become ladders to spread of wildfire. Be sure to have a family evacuation plan in place and assemble a 72-hour survival kit. You can download it at readysandiego.org.
East County
Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provides free alerts via email for major wildfires and other regional emergencies countywide. Sign up at www.eastcountymagazine.org, where you can find timely news stories posted live during emergencies. You can also follow
East County Alerts
on Twitter to receive alerts on your mobile phone. In addition, you can also register with Alert San Diego, the region's reverse 911 system, at readysandiego.org. During an emergency, you can also consult sdcountyemergency.com, the county's website with evacuation updates and maps.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.